Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Zinathi Guma. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Thamsanqa Netta from Shiloh Capital and Chantal Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments. Don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thanks so much for your time, Chantal and Tammy. I am confused. What are the market sentiments when it comes to the outlook on the Fed? Because the Fed is stressing how it needs to have more restrictive policy, of course, amid still sky-high inflation and strong labor market and modest growth in spending and production. Does that still give a 50 basis point hike in December a chance, Chantal?
So you're not the only person who's confused. The entire market is confused.
I'm glad.
Every single person who listened to that address took something else out of it.
Okay.
I mean, he spoke about a higher terminal rate. He spoke about saving the economy if it was going to get to that. He spoke about inflation still being a problem, that hikes were still going to come, but that they'll probably be lower. So there was so much in that press conference. And what you're seeing today is just the fallout of investors simply not really knowing what he was trying to say. What we do know is interest rates will still increase. They are going to fight inflation. And I think that that is kind of the near-term takeaway. In terms of what we can expect longer term, at least we know if everything's a disaster, the Fed will step in.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I don't know. Tammy, what do you think?
Yeah, please, Tammy. What are your thoughts there?
I felt like I was listening to Paul Volcker. I think what's very clear is the Fed, although they're using a lot of fancy English, has decided that they're going to use rates to correct certain fiscal and monetary imbalances. So they're going to continue to hike interest rates going forward. That has its political consequences and as well as economic ones. But if you study the English quite a lot, you might not catch the fact that the Fed has just decided they're after inflation. They're going to go for it. They're going to make sure that the economy is structurally sound, monetarily at the least, post their cycle. So that's very clear.
Yeah.
And we are expecting at least 50 basis points in December, unless there's some interventions. I'm not too sure if they'll continue to intervene in the financial markets as they've done before, which is why I feel like I was listening to Paul.
I mean, maybe they were confusing us with the English because it's also a few days before the midterm elections, so they don't want any absolutes or anything like that. So we had the Bank of England actually also coming out with its own policy decision today, a 75 basis point hike, the biggest in 33 years. But I feel like their wording was actually more certain, where they were really just trying to tell the markets that they will be cognizant of the risks that tighter monetary policy will have on the economy. So do you think that, Chantal, we could then, moving forward, start to see a kind of divergence between the Fed and the Bank of England?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the UK economy is in a lot of trouble. So if you look at the US economy, you've got high inflation, which is what the Fed is battling at the moment. But the jobs market is still quite buoyant. Nothing's fallen off a cliff yet. In the UK, you have a completely different situation because you had this massive reaction to Truss's crazy budget. And you already have a very jittery market. You've got an energy crisis that has resulted in very high energy costs, further reducing the disposable income of consumers. A hike in rates is going to kill that economy a lot faster, at least big hikes will. So they'll probably have to, and I don't want to use this word because it's like unprecedented during COVID-19.
Yeah.
They'll probably have to pivot sooner than, say, the Fed. And you'll probably see something like that coming through in other economies that are not as strong as the US. I'm thinking specifically about the EU as well.
Mm. Tell me, do you think from the Bank of England we could see a pivot or a pause? Because they still are battling with inflation that's sitting at a 40-year high.
So the Bank of England has got a couple of problems, the biggest one being proximity to Russia. The second being that they've detached themselves from the EU, so it's going to be hard to negotiate any support for them going forward because the Europeans are going to be like, you opted out. So they've got a unique problem, new leadership, new prime minister, new king, high inflation, high energy costs. It's going to be a wild ride. So I think I'm with Chantal. They're going to have to come up with, as they deem, extraordinary measures to deal with the situation, because they have a very, very different situation to the US. US is a much bigger economy, can support itself internally, especially energy-wise. The UK, I think even employment-wise, they need a lot of external input. So it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a very hard ride for them going forward. They'll need to embrace Thatcherite policies to sort of get back in order.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the questions for today. The first one is the panel's view on Hammerson. I was actually looking at that share price. And since, is it the rights issue in 2020? That share price seems to have gone nowhere. Chantal, how are you thinking of Hammerson right now?
So Hammerson is an extremely risky investment still, because you have your majority of exposure to UK retail. Yeah. Where consumer wallets are extremely strained. They're mostly exposed to kind of bigger shopping malls. And we know that there's been a shift towards online, although feet are coming back into malls. And consumers are becoming more convenience focused around that as well. So foot traffic hasn't picked up to kind of pre-pandemic levels, and you do have a situation where they're still kind of battling to settle their capital structure. So I mean, you'll have to have a lot of guts to start getting involved now. Yeah. But I do think that eventually they should trade themselves out of the situation. If you take a 5 to 10 year view, I think you can start thinking about it. But I'm still on the sidelines with that one.
All right. Tamsanga, what's your view? I mean, do you think it's worth a punt?
No. Retailers are going to struggle a lot, especially with the supply side issues. It's going to be difficult for them to sort of solve out of that. And hope is not a strategy when it comes to investment markets. We would like them to trade out, but the future of the UK, the future of UK consumption, and as well as detaching from the EU, creating new supply side issues. It's not a stock we will look at. Got Maybe it. You're short.
All right. There's one on Mediclinic. Sell now or wait until March for a payout of your shares. Chantal?
Yeah, so there's a thing in investing called the opportunity cost, right? Mm. So when a company comes under offer and it's more or less a done deal, but mm-hmm. they're still waiting for stuff to happen in between, you might see the share trading at like a 2% discount or 3% discount to the offer price. But if it takes a year for that deal to be finalized and for you to get your money, you're only going to get 3% and maybe save on brokerage. But in that time, you can invest in something that can give you much more. A money market instrument will give you more than Mediclinic over the next year. SA Retail Savings Bond, 11.5%. Hold on to your hats. That will give you more over the next year. And so to a variety of other investments, including a lot of attractive opportunities on the local stock market.
Ah, all right. Are you also on the same train, Tammy?
Yes. Copy and
All right, I hear you. All right, we have a question here on the food producers. Tiger Brands Management have not covered themselves in glory. Time to move to AVI. At this point, when it comes to food producers, because I know also the challenges that they face, but you do have, you know, some bright sparks in there. Do you kind of look at, when choosing at these food producers now, how each of them are kind of navigating the environment that they operate in, or the management? Chantal?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a difficult one because these stocks are so extremely boring. I'm just joking. They're not that boring, but they've gone through an extremely boring phase, right?
Yeah.
You've had Tiger Brands with this huge portfolio doing absolutely nothing to simplify it. It's just kind of been trudging along, going from one crisis to the next. And AVI, very conservative management team, also not doing doing much to shake things up. So we know that they're facing constraints at the moment because inflation is quite high and these food producers tend to be price takers in times like that. They at least take some of the pain from the retailers that they pass on to the consumer. So it's a difficult time. I prefer AVI personally. I think that Tiger Brands is so complex. There's so much that still needs to be done there. And until I get a clear sign that they're actually willing to do the work, I'd rather park my boring food producer cash in AVI.
I mean, Tiger Brands did come out recently with a good trading update and the markets actually reacted positively to that. So I don't know. Tell me, do you look at Tiger Brands and do you look at that maybe the fundamentals are still all right? Or do you look at the cloud that's kind of been covering them for a while?
Yeah, since the Dangote situation, I don't think Tiger Brands has really covered itself in glory. The management hasn't shown the market that they can actually operate the assets that they have in a profitable manner. We want to invest in it. We believe that it's got great assets. But as Chantel said previously, opportunity cost. We look at the alternative food producers out there. You'd sooner have your money there than in Tiger. The risk of poor management decisions are too great.
Yeah. And Lipstar, Chantel and Tammy, so starting with you, Chantel, would that be one that you'd be also looking at in that space?
Yeah, so I mean, there are a few, right? We've got 5 listed food producers in South Africa. Lipstar also has a very similar problem to Tiger Brands, except that it's a lot smaller.
Yeah,
but they also don't really have focus. So what I like about Lipstar, though, is that they do some contract manufacturing as well, which is really cool and makes it a little bit more defensive. RCL, chicken and sugar, I'm not interested.
Okay.
But Rhodes Food Group, or RFG as they've rebranded, I actually think that's a super exciting business. Management has proven to be really good at bedding down acquisitions. They're super agile. They're always looking for opportunity. So yeah, that's actually the stock that I would prefer in that space.
Yeah, tell me, do you have any appetite for chicken? And this is the thing with chicken, because it's something that we eat almost every day. But then you look at these food producers, the chicken producers, and it's a mess. When was it, last week or 2 weeks ago, when Astral Foods came out with their trading update and expecting really, really just more pressure on the front? Tell me, what do you think of chicken? We need chicken.
So this is where you have... There's many jokes in there, but we'll let them go. I think the poor business dynamics. So the product that they produce has a huge market. People are willing to eat it and buy it. But however, the struggle is the business side, the business fundamentals, the cost, the feed, and so on and so forth. So the issue there, unfortunately, in this case, we as investors look at the business, not necessarily just the product.
Yeah.
So the product of itself has a huge market and will continue to have one, whereas the business, the ability to produce that chicken profitably seems to be a struggle in our part of the world.
Yeah. Let's take a look at some of the updates that came out today, and specifically the commodity companies. Sibanye got a beating from the market, that share price down about 11% after their trading update. I don't know, but Sibanye, you know, has been quite a firm favorite for the longest time, but I feel like there's kind of a cloud over the stock recently. Tamsanga, your thoughts on Sibanye right now?
Health and safety. I think that's their biggest struggle. They need to get over that. Generally, as much as, again, as we like the product that they produce, which is gold and platinum, there's also the other side of how they go about mining it out the ground. They've got a very, very, very difficult track record in comparison to their peers. So I think if you look at it, especially if as a fund manager, you've got strong ESG concerns, they become a problem over time. As a business, as the commodities they're in, very strong, but the way they've gone about their wage negotiations as well as their health and safety issues, they are concerned.
Yeah. Chantel, are there any issues that you are concerned about on Sibanye-Stillwater? So, of course, we have production being hampered by things such as Eskom. They do have they have seen a kind of normalization from the disruption that was that they saw earlier on in their SA Gold and PGM sites. So, how are you looking at that stock? Are you looking at it considering, you know, the current operating environment, or kind of their future focus?
So I think they're doing all the right things in terms of future focus, right? So they're going for the battery supply chain story. They're investing in lithium. They're investing in a whole lot of exciting metals for the future. PGMs, depending on whether or not you buy into the hydrogen story, is also really exciting from a future perspective. And the fundamentals in that space is great. But you do have a situation where Sibanye, just from a legacy perspective, have old, deep, difficult-to-mine mines, and that impacts their safety record, and it will probably impact their efficiency as well. And you will have near-term issues like we're seeing right now in the Free State and in areas of Gauteng, where they're actually planning on closing and ceasing production at some of their mines. Those labor dynamics will continue to play a role near term. And then the other thing that I'm not convinced about, I'm still not convinced by this Stillwater thing in the US. Yeah. It was a big acquisition, and yeah, I don't think it's performing up to scratch for them. So they've got this Operation Blitz. They mention it sometimes. Sometimes they just kind of push it to the side. But there are things that they need to sort out in order for me to become really excited about the company. But as I said, I mean, the future plan, the plan looks great, but it's a plan.
Tell me, are you excited at all about Anglo Gold Ashanti? Because out of the gold counters that came out with updates today, it seemed like really the shining star, production, I think, up 20%. They managed to decrease their costs. They seem to be really doing well. Tell me.
Yes, they are performing well. I think as a business generally, if you can manage your costs, mining is a cost based business, because as a miner, you're a price taker. The price of your product is set by someone else offshore at London, in London Metal Exchange. So you don't really get to control the price. So you have to control the cost. So because they are managing the cost side and they're doing well and getting the gold out ground meaningful to their bottom line, they'll continue to do well. I think the downside they have is the industry on a particular product. So other miners which have a broader set of or a broader portfolio of minerals they produce are preferred, because you can then sort of find the other. Whereas with them, although they perform well now, the world is quite volatile and can move away from gold, and that gold price could go against them. So that's the real concern. But as a business, they're operating well.
Chantel, on Gold Fields, because it's both Sibanye and Anglo Gold Ashanti seem to have drama. Sibanye on the negative side of the spectrum and Anglo Gold Ashanti on the positive side. And then you seem to have Gold Fields that was kind of in the middle, seeming kind of boring. They labeled it as stable.
So, no, they have so much drama. They're just trying to tone it down.
Really?
they are trying to buy a super expensive business, and they're trying to convince investors that it's a good thing. So, I mean, it's really quite bizarre. The proxy vote is next week, so I think that's why they're trying to, or the general meeting is next. They're trying to kind of calm investors. We're just going along. But this potential acquisition is huge, and it is potentially transformative. They're going to go, I think, from the sixth biggest gold miner in the world to the fourth biggest gold miner in the world. Although our gold analysts or our resources analyst was like, but why is that even necessary? So there are a lot of question marks around this acquisition. And I think that the drama may not have played out today, but over the next couple of weeks, when proxies need to be lodged and the management roadshow wraps up and that vote needs to go through, we might see some excitement in Goldfields.
They're very clever because they definitely fooled me. And of course, even after, when was it, last week or a week and a half ago, they also had that independent evaluation coming up and basically saying that it's not expensive. Tammy, do you still have a wall? Have you ever had a wall of doubt over this deal, this Yamana deal?
Yes. I think the key element is the necessity of it. So a lot of the time, out in especially South African businesses go out and buy alternative assets offshore, and they normally take a hiding. The data is against South African management with offshore acquisitions of any nature with any business. So you've got to question why they're doing it, the rationale. If the rationale was to make sense as an investor, and by sense, I mean the right price, right timing, with the ability to state that they can operate it in the same manner that they operate all the other mines they have, then that's a different argument. But as an investor, you can have a good business, but if you buy it at the wrong price, you're burning us. So we will always look at the price in comparison to the future potential growth. And we're relying on South African management to do that. And the track record of South African management offshore is not great.
Yeah. All right. There's a question here I have to ask. Should I hang on to my Alviva shares until they delist or sell now and move on? Do any of you guys look at Alviva?
I don't look at Alviva, but the same answer applies as was the story with Mediclinic.
Yeah.
If the company is under offer and it's more or less trading around that final price, rather buy something else.
Tammy, do you have thoughts on Alviva?
Look, the property sector in general is tough. Also, like I think trying to time the market is always a bad idea. Before we even talk about the company in and of itself, just trying to time the market for an extra basis point here and there, that cost is just too great. So rather take your money off the table and put it elsewhere. I think the sale has happened. You understand what's going on. There's a market for your shares. Sell your shares and move on. Trying to find a few basis points here and there at the end might hurt you.
Talk to me about the opportunity when it comes to the clothing retailers. So Truworths came out with an update today saying that their group retail sales for the first 17 weeks of the FY23 year increasing 15.5%. And that's actually been a trend that we have seen in these clothing retailers, including TFG, Pepco as well. So for me, I think you would expect maybe some kind of divergence between Pepco and, for example, TFG and Truworths that are trading in the higher end of the market in terms of consumer income. But you're not seeing that divergence. Chantal, talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's actually quite an interesting one. So I think that when you're looking at Truworths specifically, they are a credit-based retailer, and credit has been under pressure for some time. But it does seem as if this specific print that was much stronger than what we've been seeing out of them for the last few years was driven by an increase in credit extension. And I think that's a very important thing to remember. So you're not going to get a similar growth rate, for example, out of a TFG or a Mr. Price, or a Woolies, because they're not as aggressive in terms of their credit. When consumers are under pressure, they do tend to trade down or they take up credit. So
yeah,
I think I would actually prefer cash retailers in the current environment and probably focusing more on discount and value. And fast, like cheap fashion, like we see with Mr. Price. So currently, I mean, Mr. Price makes sense to me. TFG's, if I could just buy Jets on its own, but with TFG's management,
okay,
that would be great. And I think Pepco. I think Pepco is going to do well in this environment.
Yeah. Tammy, do you have favorites in that complex, in that clothing retail complex?
Yeah, Pepco, definitely, without a doubt. I think Their balance in terms of their clothing portfolio, their pricing, locations, I think they will do really, really well. I think the downside of any other retailers, not just the credit side, mm-hmm. because financial statements and or financial information is looking in the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
So they have shown historically when credit was cheap. Now it's not so cheap. So going forward, those numbers may taper down quite significantly. The view is also the supply side elements. South Africa needs to get things here and how they're going to go about that. The logistics elements, those are really under pressure since COVID.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of concerns around the pricing and the logistics and the supply chain management side for a retailer which needs to really price products at a premium level. Pepco, which doesn't need to do that, I think will flourish. Their cost base is low. Their consumers are high in volume, but not so much in price. So I think they will be the winner, in my view, of the retailers going forward.
All right. Well, let's quickly get to your stock picks for today. Chantel, what will it be?
Okay, so very different to Pepco, the Richemont.
Oh, very
probably
different.
The polar opposite. Yes. So my pick today is Richemont. The share price has been under quite a bit of pressure. And we are actually starting to see a little bit of momentum coming back towards the upside. Just forget about today. Today was about the Fed and the BOE. But there does seem to be a little bit of momentum returning to that share price. Richemont is one of the largest luxury retailers in the world. It's uber defensive, and they're doing some really exciting things around their online platforms. They've got a very strong balance sheet and a very strong management team. So a really solid stock to hold in your portfolio, and I think you're getting it at a decent price right now at a pretty good technical spot.
All right. On your side, Tammy?
Mixed Telematics. They are a digital logistics firm, so they manage the digital side of all logistics and supply chain management. And I think they're gonna be a key element in the world going forward, especially around supply chain constraints, with China being under the COVID restrictions, Ukraine, Russia, and so forth. We are big on monitoring supply chain because it's one of the cornerstones of business. So we think a business like that will do really well, especially with their data. So mixed telematics.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, guys. Thanks to my guests, Thamsa Nganeta from Shiloh Capital and Chantel Marks from FNB Wealth and Investments. Do join me again tomorrow for the Friday edition of Stockwatch. The show now airs live at 1 p.m., but do send questions just before that. Have a good evening.